You're listening to the Arctic Circle podcast. In this episode, we listen to a panel on the future of Arctic geopolitics. The panelists are Mies Christiansen, professor at Stockholm University in Sweden, Atsushi Tsunami, president of the Sasakawa Peace Foundation, Qian Yang, vice president of the Shanghai Institute for International Studies, and Lasse Heininen, chair of the Arctic Circle Global Arctic Mission Council and professor emeritus of the University of Lapland. This event originally took place at the 2023 Arctic Circle Japan Forum and was organized in association with the Arctic Circle Mission Council on the Global Arctic.
Welcome to the session on Arctic geopolitics on thinning ice. This is a session organized by the Arctic Circle Mission Council on the Global Arctic. And it's exactly right place to have it here in Tokyo, Japan. I'm Professor Lasse Heininen. I'm the chair of the Mission Council on Global Arctic. It's my great pleasure to introduce my colleagues, members of the Mission Council, Mia Christensen from Stockholm University, Atsushi Tsunami, our host here, Sasakawa Peace Foundation, Yang Chen from Shanghai Institute of International Studies. And they will have their short presentations in this very order. But I mean, first, briefly say what is the Mission Council on Global Arctic. It's to place the Arctic on the global changes and explore the worldwide implications of the globalized Arctic. And like we have discussed during these 3 days here, there are many of those. And then it's to interpret the globalized Arctic as a new geopolitical context and a new method to study issues, where you have both Arctic studies and globalism, or studies on globalism. And further, the aim is to create new knowledge on the fact that the Arctic is globalized, and to create new strategic research capability to have the discussions on both Arctic issues and global issues, and finally to have an enhance resilience of the Arctic and to be a network of experts and in a way to also to promote this kind of expertise. So very briefly this, and then we all would like to give some, we hope, fresh perspectives on the situation where we are today in the global crisis and in that of global geopolitics, which is put into a new situation because of great power rivalry. And we try to find out that what might be the new layers of governance and new ways to govern the Arctic region in this very situation, where you have not only multi-level layers of governance, but also multi-stakeholder perspectives. So you don't have only states, you have many other actors as well, starting from indigenous peoples, like we heard this very morning. Okay, so I'm a facilitator here, but I'm also a scholar, a political scientist. And as a scholar of IR, international relations, I know that a war and conflict is not inevitable. There is always something more important and more important factor of international politics, and that is cooperation. And cooperation is always with competition, but not necessarily with conflict. And in this very situation where we are now, I would like to remind this, that cooperation is the most important factor of international politics, international relations. And I think that the last 30 years of the Arctic has shown this. And has shown that, yes, from a situation of economic, political, military competition, confrontation, what we had in the end of the Cold War, you can become a new situation where the main driver is cooperation and functional cooperation on environmental protection, first of all. So, and now we are facing a new challenges that we might lose it. But again, I mean, as a political scientist, I know that it is not to blame geopolitics per se. So often we got that impression that, well, everything was right until geopolitics came and ruined the situation. Well, I mean, geopolitics per se is not good or bad. It depends how you do that. And in the last 1 year, I have thought a lot and written about how we can change the situation. And coming from the discourse of critical geopolitics, actually there we could have an answer to this very situation. If only we will recognize other factors than power and resources. If we would recognize factor like knowledge. So knowledge is more powerful than physical or military power. But we have to recognize that. And then we have to trust on that. We have to build on that. And there we have another factor, and that is identity, identities. It's not only nationalism what matters. It's also how you feel, how you identify yourself. And then we will come one more factor, and that is the environment. I mean, we are saying that there is the climate crisis, the ecological catastrophe. Yes, it's good to recognize, it's good to understand that, but then we have to start to do something. And if the current governance is not enough, like I would say, I would argue that the unified state system has become an obstacle to solve, manage by efficient way global environmental issues, like the climate crisis. So if so, okay, what then? What will be the alternative way? One alternative way is to recognize other actors than states, people, societies, and that they will bring something new in order to solve the current situation. But then we cannot be stuck by the fact that there is only national security. There is also something called comprehensive security, where you have other actors as owners of their own everyday security. And again, the Arctic has, in the last 30 years, Arctic cooperation has shown that, yes, we can do it. So, by this word, I will give the floor to my colleague, Mia Christensen, please.
Thank you, Lassi. It sums up in many ways what we would like to talk about today, but I think I would like to sum it up and boil it down to a number of points, because we don't have so much time, and we have quite a few great speakers here tonight. One would be critical geopolitics. That is what I've been pursuing for almost 20 years in terms of my paradigmatic conviction in terms of how we need to think about the Arctic. And it is it has to do with the fact that we need to be interdisciplinary. I know it is saying the obvious, but it's not so easy, is it? It's having been worked at interdisciplinary teams for almost 20 years, it's not so easy. We would like to think, and we would like to produce interdisciplinary research, but it's not so easy. But nevertheless, it is very necessary, and I think it is especially at fora like this, it's very important to emphasize that we need to put emphasis on that. The second thing I would like to put weight on, it has to do with the importance of communication and mediation. I happen to be a very interdisciplinary scholar. My own training has to do with political science, media and communication studies, sociology, anthropology, and what have you. It's very interdisciplinary. And I think it is very important, despite the fact that we do face difficulties in our disciplines in terms of marrying these kinds of different disciplines, we need to do this, especially in the case of the Arctic, because we cannot do without it. What is happening in the Arctic is requiring so many different disciplinary lenses to come together. And it is not easy to put those all together, but nevertheless, it is very much needed. And I've been doing like ethnographic, or at least ethnographically inspired work for almost 20 years. And it is very much necessary to continue in this way of work, I do believe. And I think in terms of our disciplinary stances communicating with each other, I think it's very, very important that we have communication and dialogue about this. And the third one I would like to mention is the fact that I do believe it's very important, because when I started to do research about the Arctic, this was about 20 years ago, local networks and information networks and that is material networks were very limited, but now they are very much being developed. And one thing that has to do with that is the fact that of course businesses are flourishing in the Arctic, and they demand communication network, so that's one thing. But I do would like to say that regardless of that, I think it is very important that people in the Arctic, in the local communities, have the means to communicate what they have and what they do need to communicate through the communication networks. That is one thing that is very important. Unfortunately, as I said, it is developing as an offshoot of what is happening in the Arctic. The Arctic is developing as a business sort of enterprise. But I think it is very important that it also develops in terms of the needs of the community. because that's one thing that is, I would say, important to me as a scholar. I'm from Stockholm University, from the Media and Communications Department. I'm a professor there. I have been organizing this environmental communication festival for some years now, for 4 or 5 years. And what we're seeing as this part of this environmental communication festival is that a lot of local communities are contributing what they are communicating, not only through their electronic communication means, but other communication means. They are communicating what they have to say with their communication means. And I can say one really remarkable example is that this is called Stitching for the Sapmi. This film that was made by this really remarkable lady, older lady, that she was stitching and telling the history of the Sapmi in Norton, Sweden. And it was really remarkable, and she showed her film, and we had the film director. So I would like to also add that when I'm talking about media, I'm not only talking about electronic media or news or anything like that. Everything is media, and what she's doing is absolutely media, this stitching and trying to communicate what happened to their history and to their community in the Sapmi. So I would like to, I'm guessing I'm very much beyond my time, but I would like to end it there. Thank you.
Thank you, Mia. And then Atsushi.
Thank you, Lassie. I think I just wanted to echo Lassie, or Mia has already mentioned that how we can find a way to transcend kind of a governance structure or others that go beyond what we see in the geopolitics in the Arctic region. And as an academic career in my life, most of my life, adult time, as a student of political science, I have been struggling in a way to, because of how Lassie started, that as a political scientist, we start with the geopolitics, we end with the geopolitics. Either you belong to a realist camp or a liberalist camp, or you're more hopeful or more pessimistic. You know, we have sorts of variety as a political scientist, always talking about the world situation we see today. But in the days of classic geopolitics, like the Mackinder or the Alfred Mahan, I think they haven't seen the Arctic as there, because it was closed, because before melting of the Arctic ice seals and so on and so forth. So, but now we see the Arctic as a place of a lot of geopolitical discussions, and we accept that as a reality. But in my career as an academic, I was looking for something that works beyond just state competitions and rivalries, and how to manage the system. And one way I discovered was something called epistemic community, which you mentioned about the role of knowledge in the politics. And within that theory of epistemic community in the international relations, I focused on the scientific community as a way to transcend our behaviors and behaviors of states, always resulting into competition and finding a way to cooperate each other. And the role of science then become very important for me anyway, as a political science to study about. and how the science community transcends international boundaries or ethnic boundaries or even sometimes groups of civil societies. And there I decided to work on the something called the science diplomacy as a kind of a way of looking at how to relate this, the power of science with international politics. And yesterday, there was a session on my old friend Paul had this science diplomacy session, and we have discussed how Arctic is a region that we don't really need to talk about too much about science diplomacy, because it's the way that it was free from geopolitics. In other words, this is the area where all the scientific communities of the world can go and work together. And now the situation has changed. And now we have been yesterday talking about how to continue the scientists' work on the Arctic that are very necessary, needed for us to advance as to save this world. And how diplomacy can now save the science and pay back the time for the diplomacy for the work of science, and that I have very don't have a good answer to that. I think as a political scientist, I think we realize this thing about the impact of geopolitics is very real, and it's very hard for states to come back with very, unless you have a very catastrophic, punctuated shift of something, that you don't really find the states collaborating so easily. I think, as Mia was saying, that we should be looking at other layers of actors, including civil society, or like the Arctic Circle, where we have, this is not a state-driven international forum. It's both private, both states, and even beyond. And a lot of civil society people, as Mr. Grimson mentioned, that it is open and democratic. And if we keep that, there will be another layer that may save this Arctic from the geopolitical competition that may stop us even advancing any of the activities that we started in collaborating in the Arctic. And there maybe we have find another area of science diplomacy at work. Of course, we talk about the science for diplomacy, or diplomacy for science, or even the scientists informing the policymakers, as we call it, science in diplomacy. All these layers of activities can be found, not just within the framework of a state competition, but also within the framework of other kind of platform, like here, which is Arctic Circle that we have seen last 3 days. And I think, can we devise, as our mission council as well, right, a kind of a platform and then framework to save the Arctic dialogue, Arctic science, at least, in a way that that Arctic Council is now having difficulty in putting forward, in supporting this framework. So I think our challenge is to really find layers of cooperation beyond national states, nation states, but also either it's more regional, international organization, or even the private sector, civil society driven kind of platform. And all these things has to work together. And I hope that today is the last day of the Arctic Circle for Japan Forum, that we end with a hope rather than very faced a severe reality. So thank you. I will stop here for the initial comments.
Geopolitics is not a new concept. It goes along with the history of mankind, civilization. In normal time, it helps us to understand who we are, where we're from, and what's our interest, and our grandchildren and grandchildren, how we can help them to have a better life. That's in normal time, not life, normal time. But geopolitics is only a part of the international politics or global politics, but it's not all. In our last 2 days, in our forum, we can feel that the conflict of value, when we talk about if Arctic Council or other Arctic governance mechanisms allow Russia to join or not, the conflict came from the huge difference between geopolitic thinking on global order and the thinking of the challenges on the planetary scale. In a forum like Arctic Circle, in a forum like COP27 about climate change, such conflicts are very obvious. Today, geopolitics consequences put our Arctic governance, our international science cooperation in Arctic, on thin ice, just the title given, make us to in an awkward and dangerous situation. When we're thinking about issues like sea ice rising, loss of the biodiversity, about the climate change, we will feel frustrated, disappointed at the consequence of geopolitics. Can we put it in another, our current situation in another way? If we take our human beings, international society, as a Noah's Ark, we set our goal, that direction, described as a sustainable world. The ice melting, sea level rising, loss of biodiversity, climate change, are the icebergs around our Noah's Ark, around us, ahead of us, that we should avoid to bump into or bump against. Now, some geopolitical things happened on the deck of the ship. Two crewmen fight each other, and one of them should be punished, should be disciplined. The key point here is the geopolitical issue should be dealt with on the deck of the Noah. So any punishment, any policy, any measurement should on the deck. And no need for us to stop the Noah Ark because the time slot for us to dealing with the grand challenge is limited. No need to change the direction of Noah Ark. We should also keeping our eye open on icebergs. And also we need the crewman who long the fight to do his job one by one. So let's read back from where we start our mission on the Arctic. Step one. In 1987, when Gorbachev delivered his Murmansk speech, 8 Arctic countries launched Arctic Science Cooperation and Environment Protection Program. At that age, even in the Cold War, the International Science Cooperation Environment Protection Program were taken as a tool, but its purpose is to ease the geopolitical tension. The step two, after ending of Cold War, many Arctic governance mechanisms were established, such as the IASC, such as the Arctic Council, such as the Arctic Circle. The main mission of the organization platforms are from the vision and thinking of global governance on the planetary scale. So geopolitics issue in Arctic were well managed in that period of time. The emotional, historically complicated geopolitics were not allowed to impede the whole process of Arctic governance. So that's why in that period of time, that's the three decades, we can, the Arctic government can achieve a lot. So now, the step three, after Russian-Ukraine war broke out, some economic sanction imposed on Russia. But it was not limited on the deck of the ship. This time, the International Science Cooperation in Antarctic, the Environment Protection Program with Russia, once again, is taken as a tool. But the difference is that in late 1980s and early 1990s, this was taken as a tool to ease the geopolitical tension. But this time, it was to enhance geopolitical conflict. The science cooperation, the environment protection program, by stopping that, stopping international science cooperation, is ceasing the cooperation with the Arctic Council. So, the message I want to convey to the political leaders who care about the climate change issue, about Arctic governance, is, quote, as the world political leaders, when you make a major decision, you should not only consider your country's own interest based on the geopolitics thinking and the current situation, but also consider the significance of the existence and the functioning of the entire global governance systems. The tactical victory of any party in the geopolitics conflict cannot compensate for the failure of governance systems that were built by many elites, including the people in this forum, for decades to addressing grand challenges for us all. The world cannot afford to the loss of international governance mechanism and missing the time slot to implement the goal-based governance. Thank you very much.
So now I open the floor for questions. I will, I'm ready to take two or three questions. So who will start? Back there, if I can have your mic there. Please, brief questions so that we have time for the answers.
Hi, okay. The Arctic Council has come up in many discussions, and there is apparently a common interest among all of the Arctic states to continue the Arctic Council and the indigenous peoples and the scientific community. What signals can we send from this meeting that will encourage the Russian chairmanship to create a statement that will enable the Arctic Council to continue?
Thank you. I ask my colleagues to make notes. And then another meet here. Front.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. Along the lines of Paul's question, I wanted to make note of the fact that following this meeting, we will have an Arctic science meeting. I'm sorry I can't attend, but I would like to encourage the scientists to kind of set up almost a surrogate study group for each issue where we have gaps from Russia. Because one interesting thing about the situation is that we can still talk to them on the phone. The U.S. government cannot support, you know, direct communications, but we should identify what are the most important things that we cannot afford to lose as gaps in protecting the environment. I got an email this morning from someone who has worked on salmon restoration in the Kola Peninsula, and he's very frustrated that they can't have that kind of cooperation. The second thing, if there's any silver lining here, and it may not be, is that because any Russian science that continues is not going to have financial support of the kind that we heard from the science panels before. Maybe the Russians will come up with some of their own funding. I don't know if that's the case or not, but I just wanted to get the comments of the panel on ways that we can make sure we don't lose the very important data, and how do we use the communication that we are not prohibited from having, even though that we can't extend funds.
Thank you. Is there any more questions on this round? If not, thank you. If I may, I will start. To first question, what message to the Arctic Council? Well, my message is very clear. I mean, if the Arctic, eight Arctic states would let us to do our job, I mean, let the researchers, scientists, scholars to do the job what they are doing, because we have all the networks are international, pan-Arctic. So we have to continue that work. And don't please make obstacles to do that. And then to the second question, well, actually, there are many channels open between Russian scholars, scientists, and other Arctic scientists. So, my thematic network on geopolitical security, it's based on individuals. So we have kept all the channels open. And the beauty is that because we are based on individuals, we can do that. And then also the Arctic yearbook. We are all the time doing that what we used to do earlier. But I totally agree with you that we have to work more in order to make sure that data on climate change and the environment in general is updated, so that we can share the information what we are monitoring. Okay, now I will turn. Who would like to go? Chen would like to respond.
Yeah, I think it's very important to engage the Russian scientists. Can be the whole the project on the environment protection on the science cooperation. If the pressure on Russia, the government is necessary, but the engagement of the Russian scientists to join the whole systematic program of the scientists' cooperation is also very important. If you keep that level of the science cooperation, that can still maintain the expectation of Russians about its common goal with the other Arctic nation. And also, the scientists, Russia can continue to implement the common this goal of the science cooperation and the program already carried out. If that stopped, that's a loss for all of us. Thank you.
Thank you. Then, Atsushi.
Yes, because this is a Arctic Circle Japan Forum, and Jian was mentioning this. I think I'm thinking of what, as an observer state, can do. I mean, if this is the thing about geopolitics within the Arctic, the observer states, China, Japan, Korea, France, India, Singapore, Asian, sort of actors in it. I mean, even just not only Asians, but other observer states being not directly involved in the Arctic Council in a geopolitical field. I mean, platform. But I mean, can we come up with as a kind of a global voice outside of the Arctic states to say this is important? I mean, this is important for all of us. I mean, is that makes sense? I don't know. I mean, there are a lot of, I mean, it couldn't be a state actors ourselves, but we can leverage our scientific community from non-observer states. I don't know. Maybe that could be something in the coming days here in Tokyo. The scientists are gathering all over the world, I guess, on the Arctic things, and maybe we can have that sort of way of I don't know whether that's going to be the answer, but maybe, you know, can think about something, I guess. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Mia.
Hello? Yes. Okay, thank you. Yes, I would like to also repeat what you have said in terms of the importance of being party to what is going on in the Arctic region and the necessity to have representatives from there, including state representatives that we do not have at the moment. I think it's very, very important. But I think I would like to also emphasize the importance of the involvement of the people, the Arctic people, the communities. As I mentioned in my talk at the beginning, that we try to include their voices through film festivals, etc., like that. One of which I am co-organizing in Stockholm every year. So it is really important to hear their voices too, because I think these kind of fora, the kind of fora that we are part of right now, has to do with diplomacy, state voices, scientific voices, etc. But the biggest stakeholders, I would like to emphasize that, are the people, are the communities who live in the Arctic Circle. That is more than 4 million people. So I think we need to make it a more prominent part of this kind of fora to have them heard. So that's what I wanted to emphasize. Thank you.
Thank you. Now I will turn to the audience and start another round. Back there first.
Thank you. Zia Madani, Kobe University Polar Cooperation Research Center, PCRC. History and experience attained over the years suggests that in complex and challenging environments, such as space, the Arctic, and the Antarctic, collective objectives are likely better achieved when inclusive engagement is undertaken among the participants, as well as the stakeholders, not only at the level of co-production of knowledge, but also at co-creation, at the level of co-creation of solutions based on that knowledge for the problems that exist in those environments. How do you see, with that in mind, how do you see the future of the cooperation among the states, as well as the observers within the Arctic Council? Thank you.
Thank you. And then here in the middle.
Hi, Leif Lundsman from Denmark. I'm a journalist. I like the idea of the observing nations launching an open, inclusive Arctic forum. That's a wonderful idea. But I do have a question too. We learned this morning from Greenland, the wonderful motto or slogan they have launched, nothing about us without us. Everybody talks about Greenland, everybody pays interest to Greenland, but often they do it without the Greenlandic voice around the table. Now, we are all talking about Russia, talking about them without them. My question is, and I don't know who to address it to, why aren't the Russian scientists attending this conference? Aren't they invited, or did they decline the invitation?
Thank you. Are there any other? Yeah, then, there. Please, just...
Thank you, Lassie. My name is Hans van der Loo from the Blue Cooling Initiative. I just wonder how much longer the Arctic Council or the Arctic Circle will need to redefine itself. Because if you look at the interest holders of the Arctic, it's not only the Arctic countries. Could there not be an argument? I mean, Tsunami-san was talking about observer state status. is not really the interest of all the low-lying coastal areas in the world. Because the Arctic should stay in the Arctic. If it does not stay there, the Arctic visits all the low-lying coastal areas in the world. Should they not actually be included in the definition of implication?
Thank you. Then I will turn to the panel. So we will start. Jian?
I would like to answer the question about the Antarctic, outer space, some new so-called new human beings, new frontier. I think that's it's very important for us to know about some new space for a human being. The Antarctic in the early, in 1959, it was, even in the, during the Cold War, it was being settled, had an agreement on the Arctic. That's a piece of land can be left to make our mankind to think about it, without so-called sovereign state way to run a land. We are, have another way to governance, to make a good governance in that area. And outer space and the deep sea, that's diverse. So I think the peaceful use of outer space encourages scientific research and the environment protection, the responsibility on environment protection and the resources belong to the human being in that global common. But Arctic, in the central part, we call it a global common, but the area the most around the Arctic, there's a people living there. There's that we should take all the effect into it. I think we have already find a good way to treat this area. Thank you.
Thank you. Then maybe Atsushi, you will respond to that question about the Russians.
That's a tough question, actually. Well, it's not really a tough question. International Arctic Science Meeting taking place here in Japan, and they are Russian scientists that I think are participating, and they are also coming and this joining our forum as well. So I think we are not, I think Russians didn't even, it's not, my understanding is that they have not really said anything about not sending any scientists. If they are willing to come, I think they have come. So I think there is no problem with the sort of formal or informal interactions as a scientist, as an expert here coming and joining the meeting. So that's the thing I know. But anyway, the other thing about the something we can do as an observer states, also something that is at the state level, it has to be a formal discussion, dialogue, but on the civil society level or the science community level, I think that we can do something together and to make the statement that about how to save the Arctic Council and the structure as an open and open dialogue for all the stakeholders of the world. And of course, in this thing, we the can as a civil private civil society level, we can always talk to the Russians about that. So,
yeah, okay, thank you. So we are rather soon. We have to close this session, but I would like, it's only fair to respond to the question. So first question about the future of Arctic states. So I don't want to speak behalf of the 8 Arctic states, but I know that for sure that there will be cooperation between the Arctic states and Arctic indigenous peoples and other actors there. And also those other non-Arctic states who are concerned on a state of Arctic ecosystem climate. So if you have a political will, you will find ways to cooperate. So I believe in this, and we have seen this also in the last few decades in Arctic cooperation. Then the last question about coastal lines of other countries. Yes, that's very true that the Arctic is part of the World Heritage. And there is the UNCLOS, the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea. And the Arctic Ocean is becoming more and more important part of that because that is a new ocean without, thinning ice. So absolutely, and this is all exactly all about what this our mission council is doing, to trying to have a new content for that understanding that the globalist Arctic is a new geopolitical context. There are not so many methods exactly to explore what are the worldwide implications. We are so often mentioned about global impacts in the Arctic, but what about the way back? What are the worldwide implications? We should study much more that. It's not only the rising sea level. It's many, many other issues. There are also immaterial values, immaterial issues. We can learn from the Arctic indigenous peoples. So thank you very much, and we will close here.